from the heartland of America and the gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. We'll have open lines for you for this entire hour, so get ready to let your fingers do the walking on your telephone touchpad. Next hour, the Roswell Legacy with Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr., son of the first military officer at the 1947 crash site, and a historic visit from the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman, because in 1978, Mr. Friedman started it all with a discussion with Jesse Marcel Jr.'s father. Well, a story that we knew partly many years ago. But members of the Osama bin Laden family on a flight, perhaps, and here's the new information, chartered by Osama bin Laden, were flown out of the United States in the days right after 9/11, after the FBI approved the special flights. Now, this is according to new agency documents revealed by Judicial Watch. It's a public interest group that investigates and prosecutes government corruption. It has obtained and released new information from the FBI that relates to the expeditious departure of Saudi Arabian citizens, including members of the bin Laden family, as soon as flights were allowed again after the terrorist attacks in New York and Washington. According to one of the formerly confidential documents dated 9/21/01, terrorist Osama bin Laden may have chartered, it says, one of the Saudi flights. Bin Laden, considered to be the founder of al-Qaeda and the driving force behind the 9/11 attacks, has been seen numerous times in videos taunting and challenging the United States since the attacks. An incredible story, isn't it? Insurgents in Iraq have killed 14 U.S. soldiers in just 2 days. 12 died in 4 attacks in Baghdad, where a 4-month-old military surge has now reached its peak with some 160,000 troops deployed. The U.S. has also said it killed dozens of insurgents on the first 2 days of a major operation north of Baghdad. In New Hampshire, a story that we continue to follow, the plight of Ed and Elaine Brown. They, of course, have been convicted of tax evasion. They have locked themselves up in their home in New Hampshire. They're behind the 8-inch concrete walls of their 110-acre hilltop compound. The couple sometimes walks around inside where police are trying to figure out just what are they going to do, how are they going to get them. Ed Brown has warned authorities that he would not be taken alive. He said this on our program last week. He says, "We either walk out of here free or we die." The Browns were sentenced in absentia to 63-month prison terms in April after being convicted of conspiring to evade taxes on nearly $1.9 million in Elaine Brown's income, she was a dentist, and of plotting to disguise large financial transactions. Though they have refused to leave the compound, a U.S. Marshal out there insists that he has no plans to raid it, and he will just simply sit it out, and hopefully seek a peaceful surrender. So it continues, and we tried to call Ed and Elaine Brown today on the same phone number we had during that special interview we had with them, and that phone has already been changed or disconnected. So we'll work on that, and we'll get some new numbers. In Louisville, Kentucky, now listen to this horror story. A teenage girl's legs were severed above the ankle while she was on a thrill ride at a popular amusement park. The accident happened on the Superman Tower of Power at Six Flags Kentucky Kingdom. It is unclear at this point during the ride, the girl, she's 13 years old, what actually happened. The ride lifts passengers 177 feet straight up, then it drops 154 feet, reaching a speed of 54 miles an hour, according to the park's website. Obviously, the ride has been shut down indefinitely. Space Shuttle Atlantis skipped its 2 landing opportunities Thursday because of showers and clouds at Kennedy Space Center. The showers were within 34 miles, and there were clouds within 8,000 feet of the landing strip at Kennedy Space Center. Both violations of flight rules. Richard C. Hoagland told us on the program last night that it looked like weather was going to be bad, and he was right. The shuttle has 5 more landing opportunities over the next 3 days. They're going to try again on Friday, 2:16 p.m. Eastern Time, and then they've got another window at 3:51 p.m. Eastern Time. And so let's hope that they get down safely. In the country of Chile, a five-acre glacial lake in Chile's southern Andes has simply disappeared, and scientists would like to know why. Now, we had a lake disappear near St. Louis, gone, simply gone. Well, they figured there was a little hole there, and it went down just like water would go down a drain. But park rangers at the Bernardo O'Higgins National Park said they found a 100-foot deep crater in late May where the lake had been in March. Several large pieces of ice that used to float atop the water were now in the bottom of the crater. A group of geologists and other experts will be sent to the area to investigate exactly what might have happened. Now, one theory is the water disappeared through cracks in the lake bottom into underground fissures, but experts do not know why the cracks would have appeared because there have been no earthquakes reported in the area recently. Dolphins are normally very peaceful, fun-loving animals and probably smarter than humans, or at least most of us. Marine researchers are now warning about a growing number of dolphin bite cases in Sarasota County, Florida. Florida experts say the wild dolphins are becoming more aggressive because boaters are feeding them. Officials say the dolphin, one of them, bit a woman from Lakeland earlier this month when she tried to pet it. A lot of people like to swim with the dolphins. It is illegal to feed, harass, swim, or follow wild dolphins. Violators face misdemeanor charges in Florida for committing the crimes. And if you love movies, well, listen to this, because we have for you the 10 greatest movies of all time named by the American Film Institute. The Oscar winner, which topped the charts, Orson Welles' 1941 film classic, Citizen Kane. That was number one. But I'm going to start from the bottom and go back up again. Number 10, Wizard of Oz, 1939. Number 9, Vertigo, 1958. That was Alfred Hitchcock's movie. 8, Schindler's List, 1993. Number 7, Lawrence of Arabia. Number 6, Gone with the Wind. Number 5, Singing in the Rain. Not a bad movie. Number 4, Raging Bull. Number 3, Casablanca. Number 2, The Godfather. And the greatest U.S. movie, Citizen Kane, number 1. We've got open lines for you. Here are the phone numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And here's the wild card line, 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and stand by for more Coast to Coast AM. Okay, a full hour of open lines for you, and let's pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there, Eric.
Hello?
Welcome to the program.
Okay, this is Rob. I'm calling from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Yeah, what's up?
I want to ask you, you know about the JC and Oscar debate?
Oh, we're working on that, Robbie. JC, as you know, has accepted the debate. Oscar seems to be afraid, you know, the old son of Satan, claims he's got to check with his father to see if it's okay.
I had an encounter with JC. I know who JC is.
You do?
Yes.
Do you like the guy?
Yes, I know him. We used to go to church together.
What's going on back there? Somebody's getting attacked in your house.
That's my son.
Is he all right?
JC, we were Army buddies, and we were also went to Army.
Army buddies? How old are you?
I'm 60.
You're 60? Okay. Good try. Is it April Fool's? East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hello.
Mr. Norrie.
Hi.
This is Larry. I'm calling from Naples, Florida.
Hey, Larry.
On the West Coast, across from Miami.
Uh-huh.
I have a experience that I'd like to share with you that you had brought up before. I am an experiencer. You requested that some of us might come forward with some information concerning UFOs.
Yes, absolutely.
And the military. Well, I have a number of flashbacks now and then that come to me through my experiences. These are visions, very vivid, like I'm walking right in them. Very, very much real. I was in this one vision that came to me, which was confirmed later by two people that were in the military, in the Air Force, ironically, that I work with. This happened in a apparently an underground base. I was with some sort of a unit that's called an INSERT. They're intelligence, surveillance, and recovery teams.
How many people?
Relatively small groups of platoon size.
Okay.
They're armed. They do have shoot-to-kill orders. They wear camouflage uniforms. I distinctly remember the patch they used. It's a shield patch, light blue with a silver disc with yellow-gold streamers. Three yellow-gold streamers coming from the silver disc falling from the sky. Light blue background, gold rimmed with a black top.
There was everybody in a commotion at that time?
Number on it. That was the unit number. These are based out of supposedly air base here in Florida. I'm kind of nervous. So I have to excuse me.
No, you're doing okay.
Because of the possible consequences of giving this information. I was inside this base. I was walking with an apparent major that I would recognize on the street. He has kind of a medium build, probably mid-50s. Rank was major.
All right.
Military. And he had gray hair, gray crew cut. Now, it's very significant, this encounter, because it's very much different than a dream. The personalities were very much different than our own in a dream state. It was very much in reality. The as we were walking down this hallway, I passed an open area. It was a locker room. This locker room was filled with lockers, of course, with seats. And on the seats were seated these military GIs in camouflage uniforms. And they had black caps. And they were apparently cleaning their weapons and, you know, locking them up. The thing that stunned me about this was, as I was walking down the hallway with this major, I had noticed this one kid, young kid, probably about 22 years old, blonde hair. He didn't have a cap on, cleaning his rifle. It's an M16. And he looked up to me. The major ordered him not to look at me.
Why?
Passing him.
Why?
I don't know. Apparently, I would be recognized on the street if anybody saw me.
All right.
So this is what really got me. Then the major asked about my experiences. And I said, I've had UFO experiences all my life. So that was one of them. One of the
Why do you think he was so interested in your UFO experiences?
Apparently, during my sleep state, I am elsewhere, and possibly through amnesia, induced through hypnotic or other ways that they, you know, use amnesia devices, that I forget the experiences with these military groups. But my experiences off-world is what they're interested in.
Now, do you remember some of those?
Very much so.
And when you say off-world, how far off-world?
Well,
I mean, like other planets?
To my knowledge, yes. To my knowledge of other planets, yes.
They would take you there?
Well, now that's the good question, whether or not it was the military or whether or not it was my extraterrestrial buddies. I don't know.
Specifically, what do you recall? I mean, did you see entities on these other planets?
Well,
is it just a barren planet?
Craft.
And what are these crafts? What do these crafts look like on the inside?
Okay. One of the crafts that I was in, I was being trained for something, and I think you had a gentleman by the name of George K. that was on
Knapp.
A while back.
George Knapp.
No, it was a gentleman that was referring to the book, Contact Has Been Made.
Okay, you may have been one of our weekend guests, but go ahead.
Right.
Finish your story.
Well, he had experiences very similar to mine concerning these extraterrestrials. I was in this one craft that was a large room that was pastel colors. I'm recalling it right now. We were seated. I was seated on a bench-like device. I'm also with this female entity that I've encountered numerous times. Tall, kind of Eurasian-looking, but light-skinned. Very flowing garb. Lots of violet colors, blues, pastels. There were several other extraterrestrial entities that were seated there.
Did you see other humans with you, or were you the only one?
I believe I was the only one, but there were others in the background that I couldn't tell.
They were always nice to you?
Very much so. I have never had a malevolent encounter.
And they would take you around, conduct some of these experiments on you, and then bring you back. And you definitely are a candidate for some regressive hypnosis. Well, you definitely need that. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi.
Welcome to the program, and where might you be calling from?
I'm calling from Kentucky. I just wanted to talk about the Dalai Lama for a minute.
We had his spokesperson.
Dalai Lama on last night.
Yeah, Kutin Lam is his name.
Yeah. He kept emphasizing that the Dalai Lama really just wanted to promote peace all over the world. I heard him say that at least twice.
Okay, sure.
My problem with that statement is the Dalai Lama admits that he took a whole lot of money from the CIA back in the 60s, and the CIA is not really a group that's known for their desire to promote peace all over the world.
Well, maybe the Dalai Lama didn't know that at the time. You know, maybe, you know, keep in mind at that point, I mean, the situation with China was worse than it is today. And,
of course it was.
His primary he's also a human being, even though he may be a very spiritual person. And his primary goal and objective was to keep and defend Tibet. And it doesn't doubt me that that's what happened.
I'm not really buying that he didn't know it, because they were training people in Colorado. This is the New York Times printed this, there was a resistance group being trained in Colorado. Now, the problem with the resistance and the way that the Dalai Lama promotes Tibet is the fact that, you know, Tibet wasn't really the utopia that he painted as. He, they had serfdom there, which is, you know, really doesn't amount to much more than slavery. And the Dalai Lama kind of tucked tail and ran whenever the Chinese government decided that, you know, serfdom wasn't such a good idea, and stepped in and started educating some of these people. These lower classes that really hadn't been offered education before. He also, you know, for a guy that wants to promote peace and love, he certainly didn't have any problem with corporal punishment, including the death penalty. To me, that all of that doesn't really add up.
So what are you saying? What are you saying? What's the bottom line about the Dalai Lama, as far as you're concerned?
As far as I'm concerned, the bottom line about the Dalai Lama is that he's a fraud.
Really?
I think he's done a really good job of marketing himself to Hollywood liberals. That sort of demographic, you know, they'll latch onto anything if they think it's a sort of new agey. But I do not think the Dalai Lama, you know, this is a guy that's been accused more than once of doublespeak. He's gone in front of homosexual groups and said, I have absolutely no problem with homosexuality. But he's also gone on record as saying that it's not acceptable within the Buddhist lifestyle, and Buddhists aren't allowed to be homosexuals. I mean,
so you're saying he's full of double talk as well. I guess the bottom line, you know, he's the 14th Dalai Lama. This one, you think, is not from the spiritual line that we have been led to believe.
If there is a spiritual line.
Well, that's, you know, always a possibility. There are some who believe that, and far be it for us to knock other people's religions, isn't it? If you need to email me, let's make it simple for you. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. We're going to continue with open lines this hour, but next hour, an interview I've been wanting to do for a very long time, the son of Jesse Marcel. Jesse Marcel was one of the military officers on the scene of the crash site in Roswell in 1947. Little Jesse Marcel Jr. was just a child, a young kid, when Dad came home and showed him some things and told him some things. And, well, he's put it into a book called The Roswell Legacy, and he's next at the top of the hour on coasttocoastam.com. But I'll be right back. We'll finish up with your phone calls. Don't go away. Well, while I was doing that earlier commercial on 5-Hour Energy, I had a spider walking up my arm, and the thing would not get off. Try to, you know, keep your composure, do your commercial, and have a spider, which I do not like, crawling up your arm. Not fun. Back in a moment with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, and let's go to final open lines. Let's go to East of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Well, hello, George.
Well, hello.
This is Josie in Richmond, and I'm calling because this is the 40th anniversary of an attack on a ship that the press not much wants to write about, wherein the commander-in-chief, which was Lyndon Johnson, told the admiral of the Sixth Fleet not to send planes to rescue or defend that ship because it was unarmed, of course, and told the admiral, I don't give a damn if the ship sinks and every man drowns. I don't want to embarrass our allies, Israel. So,
oh, the Liberty. You must be talking about the Liberty.
My brother was one of the 34 killed on that ship. There was the rest of the ship, made two-thirds, three-quarters all wounded. And they were abandoned for 24 hours by our own government, our own country. And it was a pretty horrifying experience for those who didn't know what was happening. War crimes were committed during this attack. That's nothing done about that. That's been ordered to be kept under wraps just because it was Israel. I don't really care which country it was, because if it's a foreign power, it's a foreign power. I care that they never had a proper hearing in Congress, nor a commission. They had a official inquiry on it, and the official inquiry, was a total whitewash, and now the people involved in that official inquiry have come out with the truth about the fact that they were ordered to keep it under wraps and make it look like it was a mistaken identity kind of thing.
Well, and what had happened, though, Josie, is I've interviewed a couple sailors who were on that ship.
I arranged for that.
Oh, did you do in St.
Yes,
Louis for me? Did you
yes,
do that?
I did.
Okay.
I also know about Crystal's book, and I want you to know
that
he did not interview those crewmen that he said he interviewed.
He was
not a good friend of Admiral Kidd. My parents knew Admiral Kidd. I'm a Navy junior. And Mrs. Kidd, I talked to directly. And she said, oh, well, he sent me a book, and I sent him a thank you note, and that was all. That doesn't mean they were good friends. Admiral Kidd was not happy about Crystal. He knew what Crystal was up to. And so I can tell you there were lies in that book, and the man should have his PhD revoked on that.
Well, let me tell you, it's a bigger story than I think all of us know.
Oh, it's like they all want to keep it under wraps, the fact that, you know, the supposedly only ally in the Middle East is done war crimes on us, and they won't investigate it. And all these medals that were awarded on that ship, from the Medal of Honor, only time in the history of the Navy or our country being awarded in a Navy yard somewhere.
Well, see, what I think happened, Josie, is it started off as a mistake, and then it got out of hand.
There would be, if they jammed our radio frequencies, they were the only ones who knew our radio frequencies. They wanted to make sure that we couldn't get word to the Sixth Fleet. However, when they were actually firing at us, they could not jam. That's how they got the message out. And there were men who risked their lives to string new antenna wiring so that that message could get through to the Sixth Fleet to come and help us.
And look at the story that we just had with Bill Hinden, the former U.S. congressman who has written the book called An Enormous Crime about the POWs, purporting that we left 700, at least 700 behind. How can you do that? You know, I was in the Navy. You know about that. You know, and this is where I'm coming from. I hate war. I despise it. And I think you need to do anything you can to avoid it. But if you're in it, then you darn better win it. And you do everything you have to do to win it. You know, I'm not going to talk about Iraq or Afghanistan or anything else right now. I'm simply saying that when you put troops in harm's way, you then have to do whatever you have to do to protect them and get them out of there as quickly as possible, instead of just floating around for years and just letting that death count go up and up and up with nothing getting accomplished. I mean, if you're going to fight a war, fight a war. You know, what we did in Vietnam, whether the merits are going in or not, the issue was, once you're in it, you better fight it to win. Don't fight it to have your men killed. I don't want, don't get me started on it. You know, that's part of my military background, and that's the part that I could go on for 10 hours. Why? Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how are you tonight, George?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Hey, I had a friend call me and said last week you were interested in finding out about income taxes.
Yeah, but, you know, we're following the Ed and Elaine Brown case.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And I'm really perplexed now whether we really have a law or not.
Well, George, I used to work for the IRS.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay, and, tell me, what did they tell you and what did you find out?
What I found out, and one of the reasons I quit, George, was because my job worked with the computers, and I worked in one of the largest non-filer groups in California. And what we did was we went after people that didn't file taxes, kind of similar to what these guys were doing. But we did it on the civil side. And on the civil side, George, the IRS has the power to file returns for people when they haven't filed, and the government believes they're required to. The problem is, George, one of the things that I did was we put entries into the computer telling the computer that the taxpayer filed a return showing no amount of tax due. In other words, we tricked the computers into believing these people filed returns. And the reason was is so that we could issue deficiency notices, because a deficiency notice is what gives the government the ability to get an assessment against somebody.
Or a lien or whatever they do.
Well, once they get the assessment, then the full collection power comes.
Okay.
But in the case of a non-filer, in the case of a deficiency notice, a deficiency can only exist when the taxpayer actually filed a return. So what the government's doing is committing fraud. And I was part of it.
Are you prepared to testify to that in court?
Oh, 1998, I tried calling the, in fact, I spoke with, you remember the hearings that took place in 1998?
Yeah.
I spoke with the senator's secretary at the time, who was the one in charge of that. And once I gave them wind of that, they did not want me testifying.
They wanted no part of you, did they?
That is correct, George. I've got, one other thing I wanted to communicate.
Well, let me get your reaction to Ed and Elaine Brown. You know, do you believe that all of us, including them, are not required to file income tax returns and pay taxes?
That's an extremely complex question that right now I would probably will not want to go into with you having a guest coming on in 15 minutes.
Yeah, I understand.
But let me just say this. I have a book that my partner and I are working on that will be out at the end of the summer that will answer that question and many more with solid evidence.
When you are done,
files that will blow you away.
All right. When you are done, you get a hold of us, and we'll talk about getting you two on as a guest.
And how is the best way to do that? Your email that you gave out?
You know, do it through email. Also, go to my website, coasttocoastam.com.
Okay.
And you can send emails to producer Lisa Lyon.
Okay.
And believe we keep a very, very good file, and we'll probably bring in some other guests as well. And you are right. It is comp. Look, I filed every year since I was 16 years old. I pay my taxes. I've had my ups and downs in my life, but I got to tell you, I don't want to take a chance that the law is correct and have them knock on my door.
Well, you know, one of the things that is stated in the legal reference guide for revenue officers, which all revenue officers at the IRS is fully aware of, is that any exaction that they take, which is, you know, any money they take from you, any property they seize from you, if it's not based on law, it's unconstitutional. And, you know, they violate the procedures all the time. And when they violate those procedures, the courts have been willing to, you know, tell them, look, you didn't do this right, and therefore you can't have that person's property.
Well, see, but then you have people like Irwin Schiff. I'm sure you follow that case in Las Vegas. I mean, he's in jail now. He's a little old man. He's in jail, but he went, you know, his whole life was telling people, you don't have to file your income tax. You don't have to pay taxes. They nailed the guy.
Well, Irwin sadly, unfortunately, had an ego and would not listen to reason and didn't do his homework and didn't do proper research. Because if he would have looked, he would have found many things that he could have barked about instead of some of the things he did bark about that, quite honestly, I believe much of was wrong. But notwithstanding that, there's many other things that are wrong. And when it comes to people who are non-filers and the civil process, everything that the government does is 100% absolutely not based on the law, because they're violating many statutes written by Congress And they do it every day. I did it for nearly 5 years.
Do you know how much money you'd make testifying for people who don't file?
Well, last time I tried helping people involved with taxes, the IRS threw me out on the street. So they assaulted me. I filed charges with the FBI. The FBI told
my
me
God.
That in order for them to take the case, I'd have to repeatedly be assaulted, and then they'd consider it a pattern and then investigate it.
Write the book. Get a hold of us, all right?
You got it. Thanks, George.
All right, thanks. How about that, huh? Former IRS examiner, he says. And you got to believe him. Let's go to our wild card line. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hey, Taylor from St. Paul. There's been so much exciting stuff you've been talking about. Like, you know, she only let me ask you one question, but, like, I've...
Well, I might let you ask two, maybe three. It depends on how long they are.
Would you? Oh, sir, you're a...
Well, let's start with number one and go
okay,
from there.
Well, number one is that I think that this will light up the boards, is that we should talk about Miguel Alcubierre and... The warp bubble, the feasible warp bubble that doesn't violate relativity. MIGUEL.
We can't do that in 10 minutes.
Well, no. That's
a show all by itself.
People can go out and they can Google it. It's all over the place. I mean, it's been out there for like 8 years, and it's the space program. Second thing is that I was looking over some old books about Edison bulbs. And I realized, it came to me an epiphany, if I put two of these things, inside of one another, I have a force field.
How in the heck are you going to do that?
Well, I'll read you a segment from the book, if you'll let me. The first electron...
how long is it? How long is
accidentally
it?
By the
Taylor.
Sorry,
how long
sir,
is it? How long is it?
I can put it into like maybe
sentences. All right, you got it. You got a deal.
Okay, it's like a light bulb, except that it has a plate inside of it that collects copper. The original idea behind it was to make sure that the bulb didn't get all black and dirty. What ended up happening was that they got a current discharge there, and they found like the first vacuum tube out of it. Now, with that and the plate current going positive, you have a suction ability, right? And if you reverse it, you have the opposite. You have the repulsion ability. So if you can modulate the field of the first one, basically contain your atmosphere, because, that's what the bulb does, right? So, I mean, if you contain the electrons inside, everything's made out of electrons, so if you're hanging on to them, you're hanging on to the matter too, then you create your own bulb. Then from the inside, you have, the push from the oppositely, charged bulb.
Taylor, you sound like you're a physicist or something.
I am. I'm a student of theoretical physics.
Well, good for you. Okay. Hey, I've got to take a few more calls because the clock's getting... us, but send me the ideas. I like your brain. Wildcard line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, good evening, George. I don't want to give you my name because of what I'm about to tell you, but I'm calling on Northern California.
Okay.
I'm a skeptic, to be honest with you, but the last week and a half, 2 weeks, I've had an issue that's kind of freaked me out. I've had an out-of-body experience, but I've had it in a three-part to where I've actually left my body, sat in the chair next to my bed, and watched my spirit or whatever it is come out of my body again. And I went on Google, I went everywhere I could possibly think of to find out what this is. I've never heard of somebody, I've heard of people coming out of their body, but I've never heard of someone coming out and watching
you
themselves come out.
You are now the second person in less than 2 weeks, the other was a woman who has called me with exactly that same experience. And never, ever in my life have I been called on that before. That's weird.
I don't know what to do. It's freaked me out.
Could it have been a dream that you were dreaming you were projecting?
It's happened twice, and I'll tell you something. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen as being the second one watching it come out, because I've never – you expect your spirit to be a clear-looking thing, and it's not. I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. It was one of the most unique and freaky and scary things at the same time. And, I mean, to be honest with you, going to bed at night scares me at points because I don't know – what's going to happen. And the second thing that came out, it just went up through the ceiling, and I don't know where it went. And the next thing I remember, I'm back in my body waking up in the morning.
Are you still a skeptic, or are you changing?
I'm I'd have to change. I don't really know. And for me, that's a hard thing to admit because I am a skeptic. I'm a very hard skeptic. I listen to your show at night, and, you know, in my mind, I think, what weirdos at times, you know what I mean? How can this stuff really be happening? And almost I think maybe it was a sign to make me not a skeptic anymore. I don't know. But it's just, I don't know where to look to find anything on it. I don't understand why all of a sudden there's two instead of one. I mean, it's, I don't know.
Robert Bruce is the best for astral projection. Email him. I'll tell you how you can find him. Because if you don't get an answer, you're going to go nuts.
Oh, yeah.
I know the feeling. You go to my website on the left-hand side of the screen, coasttocoastam.com, first of all. On the left-hand side of the screen, click the show info, and then click guests, and look for Robert Bruce. He was a guest of mine not too long ago. And send him an email. Tell him what's happening to you, and he'll send you back a pretty good description.
Thanks, George. I appreciate it.
All right. Yep. Take care, because I know what it's like not to get an answer. It just drives you crazy. Let's go to our next wild card line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. Mitch in Michigan.
Hey, Mitch.
Several points real quick. The Browns in New Hampshire, if he's exercising a government-granted privilege activity, privilege license, like a doctor, chiropractor, et cetera. By virtue of that, he does owe the income tax. Whenever a corporation grants a privilege, you are required, you come under their...
You mean the fact that she's a dentist, that's the privilege?
Yep, you got it. If they're a licensed dentist or licensed whatever by the corporation, the United States is a corporation from federal to local, and you're exercising a government, a corporate granted privilege, then you got to abide by their corporate taxing purview.
And now, what if it was just someone who had a job?
Yeah. Now there you go. If that's the case, and your job is not working for the government in some capacity, let's say I'm out here doing, let's say I have some esoteric eclectic healing business.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? I don't owe income taxes. And you must understand also, it's impossible to live or reside in a corporation. It's a fictional scenario that was concocted pursuant to the bankruptcy that FDR declared by executive order in April of 1933. We've all been placed under, without our informed consent authorization, under commercial law, evidenced by your name in all caps. And by the way, being organized as a corporate trust organization, the United States is, it comes under corporate trust law. Full disclosure, good faith, no fraudulent concealment. That previous caller obviously identified fraudulent activity. And then you have valuable consideration when they take your name and your body on the birth certificate. And dig this. Everyone's body name on that birth certificate becomes a registered security asset through the Department of Commerce. It's monetized at $1 million. Guess what's backing Federal Reserve promissory notes and all of these treasury bonds, T-bills, et cetera? Everyone's name and body as a registered security asset.
I love it. I love it. Hey, thanks for the call.
Sure thing.
We're all worth $1 million. Where do we cash in? I don't have time for you. I think I got 30 seconds. What can I help you with, international caller? Are you there?
I'm from Canada, and I'm just calling to ask you about your Ouija board experience. I'd like you to explain it. I've been listening for 5 years, and I've been interested ever since I heard you talk.
I'm going to give you two quick, short answers. Number one is I had a bad Ouija board experience years ago, which was put in the first chapter of my book, Worker in the Light, when my producer brought it into a studio. All kinds of horrible things happened. I believed at that time that it had to do specifically with the Ouija board. I'm now convinced it was my producer who had a dark cloud over his head. He knows it. I'm not telling him anything he doesn't know. It's that reason alone that I need to find out if it's the Ouija board or the individual. So when I get back to Los Angeles, and I'll be there on Monday, but we're going to plan the date, we will have our Ouija board show, and I will find out once and for all if it's the board or the person. Back in a moment.